shattering this. Before I move on with this particular article, I had Scott track down a story that I heard that John Stewart of The Daily Show. I had done an expose on the foolishness of the Obaminators' engagement against the Islamic State. And at the end of his very funny review of the stupidity of the Obaminators' response to the Islamic State, he came to the conclusion that is the one that I have been trying to advocate on this show for some time. Now, John Stewart didn't say it as bluntly as I've said it. But nonetheless, he said, is since the behavior that is being manifest is clearly Islamic, and the Muslims don't seem to want to deal with the problem. You know, we have a consortium of nations, but those nations that claim that they are in this battle with us really aren't. He said, since they don't seem to have any reason to engage to alter this rather poignant and rather vicious manifestation of Islam, why are we doing it? If they don't care, why should we care? It's their homeland. It's their religion. They obviously aren't motivated to do anything different. So why should we intervene? It's not our battle. We can't fix their problem. It's their religion. We can't solve their religion. We shouldn't be there. We shouldn't be bombing them. That was, in essence, the conclusion that John Stewart came to. Now, if John Stewart knew Islam as well as I do, if he knew that Muhammad claimed to have become victorious with terror, if he knew that the first year of the Islamic era begins with the Pledge of Aqaba, which is a declaration of war on all, against all mankind, if he knew that Muhammad inspired and led 75 terrorist raids in the first 10 years of the Islamic era, if he knew that kidnapping and rape and the slave trade were all germane to Islam's beginnings, if he knew these things, then he would probably go one step further, which is to say that in addition to not engaging in war to try to solve a religious problem, we ought to disengage from the region. We shouldn't be supplying either side with military hardware. We ought not be bombing on behalf of any side. We ought not be doing business there. And if we were to walk away and to use whatever influence we have left in the world to get other nations to walk away, just to isolate that region of fundamentalist Islam, then they might continue to kill one another, but they would do so with sticks and stones, not with the tanks and artillery and warplanes. And in addition to that, they would have a devil of a time trying to motivate Muslims there to reach out and attack people that were not attacking them, like the United States. The world would instantly be better if we disengaged and isolated the world of fundamentalist Islam. Now, John Stewart got halfway there. He's a reasonably smart lad. What do you think he would have said had he actually studied Islam and if he had the courage of his convictions? So I want to return to this Reuters article. It says, after capture, the Yazidi Webbeted children were divided. These would be, after being kidnapped and then enslaved, the Yazidi women and children were divided according to Sharia amongst the fighters of the Islamic State who participated in the operations. Now, how do you think, Mr. Reuters journalist or Mrs. Reuters journalist, that became part of Sharia? Since Sharia is based entirely on Muhammad's example, if Muhammad didn't kidnap women and children, and divide the women and children amongst his jihadists according to those who engaged in the battle, then how did it become part of Sharia? I mean, this is really not difficult to make this connection. And since it is part of Sharia, and since it was Muhammad's example, and since 100% of the documentation from the Quran and Hadith that comprise Sharia, that comprise the religion of Islam, that provide 100% of what we know about Islam, its prophet, its God, and this religion, as well as its horrible character, why would you say that it is inconsistent with the religion? And it's absolutely insane. It's irrational. It says, after one-fifth of the slaves were transferred to the Islamic State's authority to be divided among divided as qums. It said, qums are a traditional tax on the spoils of war. It's not a traditional tax. This is fundamentalist Islam. You see, when Muhammad's goons, his jihadists, the first Muslims, terrorized a community, and they stole the community's property, and by the way, they never fought an army, ever. They only raided civilians. It was only terrorist attacks, militant attacks against civilian communities. The property that they stole was divided, where Muhammad got 20%, and which is like the Islamic State getting 20%, and the jihadist who actually perpetrated the heinous crime of robbery, of armed robbery, got to divide amongst the remaining 80% among themselves. The same was true with enslaved women and children. Muhammad got 20% of them. The rest of them were divided amongst the jihadists. The same is true with property, both tangible, both real property and personal property. It was always the same. That was the way that the Quran and Hadith established the spoils of war. This is not a Arab tradition. This was Muhammad's. This is what the Quran says. This is fundamental to Islam. The spoils of war surah is the eighth surah of the Quran. Read it if you don't think what I'm telling you is accurate. It wouldn't have been difficult for this journalist to acquaint themselves with reality. Might have even done them some good. This large-scale enslavement of mushrik, which is idolater families, is probably the first since the abandonment of Sharia law, according to the Islamic State. Well, no, but it does point out that it is consistent with Sharia law, that now that Sharia law has been reimposed, you have the large-scale enslavement of women and children. And now there have been, I mean, Islam has perpetrated this kind of behavior now for 1,400 years. So, because there's always been the influence of Sharia on Islamic communities. And for the Islamic State to base, to justify their heinous actions on Sharia, which is fundamental to Islam, reveals that they are fundamentalist Muslims. Dabiq distributed a slickly produced online format, and it's designed by the Islamic State to present and promote the Islamic State so that various people from around the world, other fundamentalist Muslims, will want to join it and contribute to it. The cover shows a picture of St. Peter's Basilica in Rome with an Islamic State black flag superimposed in place of the cross atop its obelisk. It's really funny. The obelisk, of course, is an Egyptian sun god, pagan statue. In fact, there's one outside of the Papal Palace. taken from Egypt as one as the middle of the Vatican circle. And so the Islamic State is absolutely correct in painting Roman Catholicism and St. Peter's as idolaters, meaning that they are pagan. It's funny in a way. And they're showing, of course, the black flag. And the black flag is not the black flag of the Islamic State, although that is how it's being presented. It's the black flag of jihad. And the black flag of jihad is something that was instigated by Muhammad. It's part of Sharia. It's part of Islam. Now, inside of this brochure, it features photos of the group's arsenal of heavy weaponry, almost all of which it has stolen from the Iraqi army. And what it says is the final letter to a mother of an American journalist. The article on slavery confirms practices documented by Human Rights Watch, which says that Yazidi women and girls were forced to say marry. And they didn't even put it in quotes here. I mean, this journalist is so lost, they didn't even put it in quotes, forced to marry Islamic State fighters. They're not forced to marry them. They're enslaved by them. They're raped by them. They're captives forced to have sex. It's rape. It's not marriage. It's rape. And then shipped out in busloads from Iraq to Syria to be sold off as prizes. Now, the thing that no one seems to want to respond to here, okay, Islamic State bad, kidnapping these little girls. Enslaving these little girls, Islamic State worse. Selling off these kidnapped and enslaved little girls as sex toys to be raped, worser, I don't know where you want to go with that. But this is the part that strikes me. Who were they selling them to? Now, they just gave them to the jihadists that participated in the raids. That's according to Sharia law. Those jihadists then had to sell them for them to have any value. After they raped them, they sold them. Who did they sell them to? Well, they sold them inside of Syria. What is the population of Syria? No, it's Islamic. They sold them to Muslims. Muslims who were not engaged in jihad thought it was moral to purchase a human being for the purpose of sex. By the by, come Monday, Scott, who is the producer of the Shattering Myths program, is going to announce the location of a Shattering Myths Facebook page. It exists today. It's just that the URL right now to it is a temporary URL that's very complicated in a series of numbers, but it will become the Shattering Myths Facebook page come Monday, and we'll make the announcement as to how to find it on Monday and to participate in it. The news articles that form the beginning of this program will be posted there. Past news articles will be archived there. And, for example, the very funny bit that had a very serious bite at the end of it that Jon Stewart did, that we just commented on is already posted on that page. So we will provide that information come Monday. One of the more significant contributors to this program, Larry, has been working with Scott in the production of this page. One of the purposes of it, beyond giving a forum for discussion for those who enjoy the program, just as there's a chat room for our Shabbat program on Blog Talk Radio, is that be a place to pose questions or to make comments that we can integrate into the show. One of the things that we're aware of is the fact that somewhere between 90 and 95% of the listeners to this program listen to the archives, and so it is difficult for them to call in and participate in the show live. But with the Facebook support and community for the show, no matter what time that you listen to the program, make comments on it, ask questions, propose ideas, they can be incorporated into the show. Is that a fairly accurate review of where we are at this point, Scott?
Yeah, that's a pretty pretty thorough explanation. Probably better than I could have given. Yep.
Great. So we look forward to be able to make that announcement come Monday. Now, it is interesting that no one seems to want to deal with the fact that busloads of little girls were sold off as sex slaves by the Islamic State in Syria, where you have non-jihadi Muslims that are buying them. Don't seem to have a problem with that. You know, there's an article that I put in my list of articles to cover that this feminist in America decided that she would convert to Islam because it appealed to her feminist ideals. Just say, you know, people don't think. We've lost the capacity to exercise good judgment. And when you do that, what you're in essence doing is sacrificing one of the great gifts, in fact, two of the great gifts that God gave us. One is the ability to think, which provides those who are willing to exercise good judgment with understanding. You can the difference between a scholar today and a wise individual is the scholar knows many things, but the wise person understands. Then understanding is vastly superior to simply knowing. But the other issue is free will. We were all given free will. Humans were created with free will so that we could make choices. But if you can't exercise good judgment, if you are indoctrinated with political correctness, if you are indoctrinated with patriotism, if you're indoctrinated with a political perspective, if you're even worse, indoctrinated in a religious culture or community, then you have forfeited the exercise of good judgment because you aren't going to be willing or even able to evaluate evidence and reason and come to a reasonable conclusion. So what good is free will if you've squandered the ability to think? When you deal with most Americans today, they react. They spew out opinions as if they were entitled. They are moved by feelings, sound bites. Very seldom able to think. Let me give you a great example. Many of you have heard my story, this tale of woe in the central coast of California, where I'm trying to sell a house, and they have installed water police in here. Those of us who have an acre parcel are limited to what, well, last month, for example, in my situation, it was less than 20% of the same amount of water I used last year. Now, California as a whole, all water districts reporting, has saved exactly no water this year versus last year. No savings whatsoever. And yet, they're imposing on us, by severe penalty, an 80% restriction. So we imported some water to moderate that modestly, and now they've shut that down. Welcome back to Shattering This. In actuality, Scott was able to get a confirmation of the Facebook program or Facebook site page, if you will, that is now in support of this program. It is very simply facebook.com/Shattering This. So you can go there now, and there's material posted already that is in support of the program. So thank you, Scott, for doing that. And I encourage our listeners to go there, participate, and let's make it a forum to support the program. This particular article from the Reuters Genius says that mainstream Sunni scholars around the world have denounced the Islamic State and its interpretation of Islam. No, they haven't. That's just factually untrue. There is one Muslim who's not a Muslim scholar. It's a politicized Muslim position, politicized by the royal family in Saudi Arabia, that made a statement disingenuously that said that the Islamic State was not representing true Islam. But that is what every power-seeking power-coveting Muslim says. That's what the Sunnis say of the Shias. That's what the Kurds say of both. It is what Assad says of those who wish to depose him. It's what Saddam Hussein said of those who wish to depose him. It is what Muslims have always said of one another. And it's the same thing true would be true with Eastern Orthodox versus Roman Catholicism and Christianity. It's always a positioning of who's in charge. The Saudi Arabians want to be seen as the highest ranking Muslims in the world because their fiefdom controls both Mecca and Medina. The Turks, because of their history with the Ottoman Empire, want to be considered the most important Muslims in the world. It's the Iranians, as the seat of Shia Islam, want to be considered the most important Muslims in the world. And they're all fighting for supremacy within the same religion. And so what they say is that the others do not interpret the religion correctly. That they have the proper interpretation of the Quran and Hadith. And in actuality, their interpretations of the Quran and Hadith are identical. The only thing that differs is who's in charge. But this writer for Reuters is incapable of making that distinction. It's a shame. Because they deprive their readers of information that is germane to understanding what is occurring. It goes on to say that the Islamic State has hounded ethnic and religious minorities in northern Iraq since seizing the city of Mosul in June, killing and displacing thousands of Christians, Shiite and Turkmen, who lived for centuries in one of the most diverse parts of the Middle East. What, again, the journalist hasn't figured out is that there's a reason that Iraq used to be reasonably diverse, why there were a million Christians in Iraq. Why the Yazidis, the Zoroastrians, chose to live in Iraq versus in Iran. Why the Kurds had more freedom in Iraq than they did in Turkey. What were the reasons for those things? Why was terrorism between Sunnis and Shias so de minimis in Iraq prior to the American invasion? And the answer is really obvious. And that was that Saddam Hussein was a secular dictator. He gave no opportunity to fundamentalist Islamic zealots that engage in jihad. He ruled as a secular dictator and therefore would not tolerate the influences of fundamentalist Islamic terrorist organizations. And he, like Assad, as a secularist, forbid the fundamentalist Muslims from attacking the Christians or the Zoroastrians or the Kurds until such times as the Kurds turned traitor. And at that point, they became fair game. But the Christians just wanted to live in peace. So did the Zoroastrians. So they were protected. But when the United States deposed Saddam Hussein and replaced Saddam Hussein with a Shiite government controlled by Tehran and the mullahs in Tehran, that all changed. The Christian population has been annihilated. And 90% of the annihilation of the Christians preceded the rise of the Islamic State. They just finished the job. The Shias were more vicious towards the Christians than has been the Islamic State. So, what we did in Iraq, America did by invading Iraq, was to create an environment where there was no opportunity to be a minority, where minorities were terrorized, annihilated. The same thing is true in Syria. As bad as Saddam Hussein and Bashar Assad were and are, and they're both sadistic dictators. Both of them are enormously preferable to those who either have or would oust them. And the proof of that is the fate of minorities, the Christians, the Zoroastrians, the Kurds in these countries. That's the lesson here. We made a bad situation worse. That's the lesson. This journalist can't figure that out because he or she can't think. Whoever wrote this article for Reuters is incapable of thinking. They cannot exercise good judgment. So they want to blame the fate of Christians on the Islamic State as opposed to the American invasion. Just not thinking. This goes on to say the Yazidis, who follow an ancient religion derived from Zoroastrianism, and by the way, if you go back to the initial presentations of the Yazidis in Reuters, as well as other periodicals, they always said that they were a blend of Islam and a number of other religions, which is just not true. And back at the first report of the Yazidis being harassed by the Islamic State, I did an entire program on Zoroastrianism, the nature of the religion, and how this minority of Zoroastrians came to exist here in Iraq, and how Zoroastrianism had been the official and dominant religion of Persia, and how when the first Muslims conquered Persia, they accused the Zoroastrians of being devil worshippers and essentially annihilated them. And the few that, the 10% that survived the barbarism of Muhammad and his thugs, had to move out of Persia, which is Iran at the time, and they hunkered down in mostly in India, but some of them found solace in Iraq. And that's their history. They have been hounded by Islam for 1,300 years. This is not something new. Now, the Debek, which is the article and magazine promoted by the Islamic State, said that fighters were receiving a practice of the companions of the Prophet Muhammad by enslaving enemies. Well, the reason they said so, and that it was the practice of the companions of the Prophet Muhammad for enslaving enemies is because it's true. Enslaving women and forcing them to become wives reduces sin by protecting men from being tempted into adultery, it said. But these women aren't wives. They're sex slaves. And Muhammad didn't give them as wives, and he didn't give them to men to protect men from being tempted into adultery because Islam is based on adultery. Not only can a Muslim man have four wives, and Muhammad had as many as a score or more at the same time, but the fourth position in Islam is rotating, which means that the woman that you happen to be with, you can have three wives, and your fourth would be whomever you happen to be with. You could use prostitutes or sex slaves, all you want, and change them out on a daily basis. And they're still considered a wife in Islam. It wasn't done to protect men from being tempted into adultery. And this is just unbelievably stupid that a journalist would report this without being able to confront it. Women and little girls were given to the jihadist who perpetrated terrorist raids on Muhammad's instructions because it served as an incentive. If you tell a young man, if you wield a sword or a spear and you attack a civilian community and you get to keep 80% of whatever you steal and you can enslave whomever you capture and you can rape the women, if you're dealing with depraved individuals They'll play along. That's how Genghis Khan and Kublai Khan and Tamerlane carved out what was geographically the largest empire in human history. Tamerlane himself a Muslim. This is how Islam triumphed. Had Islam not offered its jihadists the spoils of their terrorism and the ability, the men, the ability to rape the women, Islam never would have succeeded. No one chose Islam because it made sense. No one chose Islam because it was it inspired them. Every Muslim of those who engaged with Muhammad and those who came immediately after him were Muslims because of sex, power, and money. The fact that they could, in the name of their religion, justify terrorizing anyone, enslaving the children, raping the women, stealing whatever property they could confiscate. That's why they became Muslim. And that's how they spread Islam. It was very similar to Genghis Khan and Kublai Khan, and that it was a pirate's raider religion. We'll be back. Continuing with this moronic article from Reuters. They present a quote from the Islamic State's magazine. And the quote reads, "One should remember that enslaving the families of the non-believers and taking their women is a firmly established aspect of the Sharia. That if one were to deny or mock, he would be denying or mocking the verses of the Quran and the narratives of the Prophet." Now, do you think there is any chance in the world that the editorial board for Reuters or the journalist writing this article bothered to determine whether or not that statement is true? Because, by the way, it is 100% accurate. One should remember that enslaving the families of non-believers and taking their women, and this is as concubines, as sex slaves, is a firmly established aspect of the Sharia, Islamic law. And that if one were to deny or mock, he would be denying or mocking the verses of the Quran and the narratives of the Prophet. So, I mean, at that point, you're in the same position that I was in now 13 years ago. Immediately after 9/11, I interviewed Al-Qaeda. I was brought into a dungeon, a meeting that was arranged by the Mossad to meet with Al-Qaeda. I met with Hezbollah, Aska Martyrs Brigade, Hamas. And the meeting, the terrorists, one after another, justified their murderous behavior, including members of Fatah, which is the party that runs the West Bank, where the three men dressed in American-provided military garb and carrying American M16s, which were and having been trained by America in Virginia. The night before our meeting had murdered 12 Jewish women and children. They're on the road to Emmanuel. They blew off the axle of the bus that they were riding in, and they were dressed in IDF uniform so that the women and children thought, you know, this has just been an accident, and we'll be fine. We'll get off the bus and we'll be protected. And they these Muslims then shot rounds of American ammunition into their heads at point-blank range, killing the women and children. And they were gloating about it, and they cited the words and deeds of Muhammad as justification. So I was in the same position that the Reuters staff was in, which really every American should be in, particularly our politicians and our Justice Department officials and Department of Homeland Security and military, as well as everyone in the media. The Islamic State made a blunt statement. They said that, remember, the enslaving of families of non-believers and taking their women as concubines, as sex slaves, is a firmly established aspect of Sharia. And if one were to deny or mock, he would be denying or mocking the verses of the Quran and the narratives of the Prophet. The narratives of the Prophet are the Hadith. Is it true? Is it an accurate statement? There's only one way to find out. That's to read the Quran and to read the narratives of the Prophet, which is the Hadith. So what happens if you read the Quran? Yeah, you find that, in fact, the Quran does support enslaving non-believers. The Quran does support raping captives. And the Hadith glorifies it, wallows in it, celebrates it, speaks of it in the most glowing of religious terms. So, now what? Now that you know that that statement is true, how do you separate Islam from this heinous behavior? You can't. I mean, there's a reason that there isn't a great movement in the Muslim world to condemn the likes of the Islamic State, to condemn the likes of Hamas. Why do you think that there's no Islamic country that's condemning Hamas? They're identical to the Islamic State. Why? Because they know that to condemn the behavior of these terrorists is to mock the Quran and to mock the Hadith.